Hi, I'm Ken. I'm an alcoholic. Good to be here. I may talk a little funny. I'm in the process of having my jaw rearranged. So if I sound a little funny at times, it's because I'm a little funny. They noticed that I wasn't breathing right. When I was drinking, I had a habit of getting my nose broken. And it always seemed I was defending some lady's honor. And who didn't have any. And now as you get older, which people in this group can attest to, those things that you did in your 20s and 30s now need patching up. So I'm going to have, it looks like right now I'm going to have my jaw broken, and I'm going to have my nose broken so I can get it fixed. Go figure, you know. And I remember the little dentist was working on my mouth. She said, "You must have hit something when you were younger." I said, "Yeah." She said, "What?" I said, "Fists, clubs." You know, anything that was in the air was usually heading my way. But I'm really, really happy to be here tonight. It's always nice to stand in front of one of these things and not have to enter a plea. I have a little, usually attorneys are very thorough in their instructions, but Dennis was a little remiss. We are going to try to break this room down, as I understand it, in 5 minutes, and you pick up the chair, but please make sure it's empty. You know, don't get carried away in enthusiasm and try to move someone who's not ready to move. It doesn't work that way. I want to thank Linder and Jonathan and Dennis, all the folks on the committee, for inviting me to come here. It's been a great weekend. You know, it's really been a great weekend for me. And I want to thank Jay for being such a great host. And I got to see some people that I haven't seen in a while. Joanne got sober out in our area. And, I'll stop there. But she came in the class of 80 and she's still sober, and about maybe 84 or so, moved over here, and has been here ever since. And she comes back almost every year to take a cake back in our area, and she used to go to I went there too, but it's a little town called Lemon Grove. Now, you got to try to picture this. I realize you're more cosmopolitan here, but most towns, little towns, have like monuments or guys on horses or somebody who did something in World War I, World War II as the center of the town. This town has a lemon right in the middle of the square. It's a lemon, and it says on it, "Best climate in America" or something, you know. And when you go to speak there, they give you a bag of lemons, you know. That's the deal. And they have a bikers meeting there. They have these like Hell's Angel guys who are getting sober. They cry a lot. Oh, God. And, but they have a fireside meeting on Tuesday night, and they light the fire. Now, that's okay in, like, December and January, but, like, in July and August, it's really, like, unbelievable to see ex-bikers crying and melting at the same time. You know, like, you say, geez, Zoe, this is what's going on here. And there's a guy there who Joanne got sober with, Jimmy T, and they kind of buddied around for a while. And when Jimmy T first got sober, he was epileptic. Now, fortunately, he's gotten whatever treatment you get, and he doesn't do that. But I was leading the meeting, and they have metal chairs. And right in the middle of the meeting, he does like a Brody. He's out of the chair, and he's knocking things over, and the coffee's gone one way, and you know alcoholics, they love that kind of stuff. It's like, you know, people are ripping off their loafers to put in his mouth, and I got a belt, I got a 2x4, and they're trying to help this guy out. And in the process, they're almost killing him. And so after about 5 minutes, he gets composed and he sits back down and he's kind of quiet, and they give him another quarter cup of coffee. And no half cup for a guy who goes that ballistic. And I said to him, "What's your name?" He says, "Jimmy." I said, "Jimmy, if you want to volunteer, just raise your hand like everybody else, And of course, then you end up getting stuck being a sponsor for that guy, that kind of a deal. But I am so glad to be here. I really am. This has been a nice weekend for me visiting all the folks. And I like your picture over here of Dr. Silkworth. I'm originally from New York and grew up in one of those neighborhoods where you say, how far is it to the subway? And they go, we don't know. No one's ever made it, you know. you know. But Dr. Silkworth is buried in a little town in New Jersey called West Long Branch. It's a very, very, very small cemetery. And to show you how alcoholics are, I was sober about a year. I came in, I got my sobriety date is July 5th of 70. And so it was about, thank you. So about 71, I think his birthday is June or July, and they decided we're going to go drive from New York, which was like 45 minutes away, down to this little town. We're going to read how it works, go to breakfast, and, you know, that was it. It was going to be a simple deal. So the first year, that's exactly what happened. About 8 or 10 of us climbed into a couple of station wagons at that time, and we drove off, and we did this little deal. And then the second year was coming up, and somebody said, you know, when we were down there, there was an old apple tree, and there was a lot of apples around there, and you know, maybe somebody could get down ahead of time and like rake it up so that we're not standing in that stuff. And then the next year was, you know, it was like, we'd like to invite some women to come with us, but you don't want them standing. Maybe we should get some folding chairs and have it there, you know. And then it was a little spritzy this day. Why don't we get a canopy and put it over the... Why don't we cut down the apple tree so it's not in the way? Why don't we raise up the headstone, which was like at an angle? And I'm thinking, you know, there isn't anything so simple that alcoholics can't complicate it. You know, like, we can take any solution and turn it into a problem. You know, like, and we do it without even changing gait. You know, I can do it, you know. And I like Silky because he wrote stuff that now is in our book and it's part of our deal here. You know, I was listening to all of the speakers that I know here, and there isn't a person here who's sober over a day who won't start to have things in their life that they wish did not happen or weren't happening. I don't care how long you're sober. And so sobriety to me anymore isn't about what happens to you. It's about what you do with what happens to you. Because it ain't going to get stopped just because you got sober. You know, life doesn't say, hey, he got sober. Let's just tiptoe away from him and give him bliss forever. You know, it's like, yeah, welcome to the club, you know. This has been going on all along, but you've been a little absent, you know. Alcoholics think it's enlightenment when they stop being delusional, you know, like, you know, they, hey, I'm back, I know, we noticed, you know. But when you take, I noticed your little thing here, I looked at the, I don't know whether this means AA is for the birds or what, I don't know what this means here. But I got the invitation in the mail and I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, a sand lapper, you know, and I got through school totally unscarred by education, you know. I hung out with guys and said, hey, how come there's a light on the vacuum cleaner? And they said, don't be so stupid, Tony, in case the power goes off. You know, like, I was 35 years old before I realized that Moby Dick was not a venereal disease. You know, like, that's just the way we were. We were not the brightest bulb in the room. So I got a dictionary. I figured it must be a bird, like a sandlapper. There's no sandlapper. I look under sand, I look under lapper. I look under per, lap, le, French or something. And, there's no such thing. I think these guys have a convention, they have a logo, and it doesn't exist, you know? It's like somebody must have said, yeah, well, I think I'll name it after the sandlapper. Okay, you know. Since we all are astute ornithologists here, you know. The mythical sandlapper, you know. But I actually, being here this weekend, realized what the sandlapper is. The sandlapper, I read in the thing, says, people who ate sand for holistic purposes. You know, I ate a lot of crow, but I never remember saying, I think I'm going to get better. Give me a dish full of mud. You know, like I never remember saying that, you know. But I think the sand lapper, I was in my room. And by the way, I got a very, very nice room here. You got the ocean. I mean, I get on a plane. This still amazes me. And I come east. I'm coming away from the ocean. And when I land, the ocean's still there. You know? It's like, no matter where you go, it's there. You know? And it's kind of like my alcoholism. Wherever I went, it was there. You know, like I would show up, it would say, hey, waiting for you. You know, like... And the deal is I looked out at the ocean and I realized that's the sand lapper. You know, I watched the waves coming in and lapping up on the sand. And I thought, this is the deal. This wave is the sand lapper. But it's a sober wave. And this sober wave is coming in, doing its little deal, and it's going to go right back to the ocean. And if you're an alcoholic and you're a sober alcoholic, if you're smart, no matter how you lap up anywhere, you'll go right back to AA. No matter how you lap up, it doesn't matter what's going on, you go right back to AA. You know, we talk a lot here, the sub-theme is into action. When you read that chapter, Into Action, it tells you in the first paragraph what the whole chapter's about. It's about getting a new attitude. It's about getting a new relationship with God. And it's about discovering the obstacles that are in the way to your recovery. And then it goes on with steps 5 through 11, and it kind of just covers all that stuff. And it talks a lot about spiritual life and spiritual theory, or spiritual life is not a theory, and all this spiritual stuff. And if you take the word spiritual and you look at it, inside the word spiritual is the word ritual. And Alcoholics Anonymous is a ritual. It's going to meetings, it's working with others, it's reading the owner's manual. It's like doing all the things that we do that's part of the ritual, and then that somehow leads you to spirituality. Now, most of the stuff we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, at least through my experience over the last 28 years, is that none of us know diddle. But we don't mind sharing it, you know, like, you know, but you look what holds us together. What holds us together is like really interesting. Outside of a loving God, which thank God exists, the rest of it is words that you say, okay, like even Silky, the nicest guy as he is, he said, well, they suffer from the phenomena of craving. So I get my dictionary, look up phenomena. It means you can't explain it. Okay, so I'm driven by something I can't explain. Okay, no problem. Then the book says when the alcoholic drinks, something happens. I said, God, this is real specific. You know, like, I got something I can't explain, and when I do it, I don't know what's going to happen. But don't worry, there is a solution. And that solution is you have to have an entire psychic change, which nobody knows what that is either. So no wonder we have this triangle. It's like a very pointy program, you know. It's like we are dealing with stuff that we just have words for, but in reality, nobody can scientifically lay it out for you. You know, I'm a real alcoholic, you know, and if you don't know what a real alcoholic is, you should read the big book, read the owner's manual. You know, I was one of those alcoholics. Some people think the glass is too big, half empty or half full. I always thought the glass was too small. You know, I always said, yeah, I don't want to be bothered. You know, I drank stuff that not only hit the spot, it removed it. You know, like, it was like, that's just the way I am, you know. I just drank that way. You know, it was like, you know, and I had a lot of dependency, just a new word, dependency issue. I had a lot of dependency issues when I was drinking. You know, I used to say to people, excuse me, is my fly open? And they would say, no. I said, well, it should be. I'm peeing. You know, like, I always had stuff going on that I didn't know was going on, you know? And it's like today, guys come to me and say, Ken, you know, I live in a dysfunctional house. I say, of course you do. You live alone. We invented all new vocabulary to describe the old stuff, which we still haven't been able to describe. when you get back to it, it's, yeah, he's got the phenomena. Oh, yeah, he looks, I think she's got the phenomena, too. I think she's coming down with that, yeah. What does any of that stuff mean? You know, what does it mean? And what I have found out is that as you go along in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the book talks about this, it says that eventually it becomes your journey. And the only thing that you really are doing here, as I see it, is we're trying to do those three things they talk about at the beginning of, that chapter, Interaction. And that is trying to develop a new attitude. Now, what I noticed about my attitude is, and that's why I needed a new one, is no matter how I looked at life, or no matter what was going on, my attitude always showed up first. Anything that was going on over there, my attitude would get there first. It would arrive before I even arrived. And it would decide whether this is good or bad, right or wrong, judgmental, whatever. And then I would show up. And then I would back up my attitude. And that's why I'm having all this nose and mouth stuff. I would question people's ancestry at the drop of a hat. And the deal was is that now what I see is that in the changing of my attitude, I need to get more into the ritual. And I have to be very, very abstinent of not only alcohol, but allowing other people to determine my attitude. You know, we have a book that we mentioned in the big book, Variety of Spiritual Experience. And in there, James talks about the great unseen reality. And that, to me, has become more and more a part of what goes on here. There's our perception of what is going on, and then there's what's going on. And what most of the time we talk about is what we think is going on. That's why you can have three alcoholics talking, none of them in reality, sharing their experience, strength, and hope, you know? And if you're an outsider, you're looking, you're going, I guess they forgot. Let's see what the psychiatrists say about these people. Oh, they're maladjusted. They're in full flight from reality, and they don't know diddle. And now they're going to get better by helping one another. Woo, woo, woo! And I think as I'm here longer, what we do is we entertain one another while God does whatever he needs to do, you know? You know, we haul each other around, we share theories of all kinds of stuff, and I'm totally convinced nobody knows anything. And I come to meetings to support that, really. And I share at meetings so I can confirm that. So it's like, I know no one knows diddle. But I notice the people who are most knowledgeable are the people that in reality don't know reality. You know, wouldn't know if it hit, snuck up and picked their pocket, you know. And that's why I love coming to these kind of things, because I love to come and see the collective conscience of AA. It would be like saying, would you go bail for this group? Oh, sure, you know. They're all good members in good standing with AA. And the bottom line is that, you know, the people I saw 2 days, 3 days, 5 days, they think this is solely about getting sober. That's what it's about. That sobriety is everything. And it is. But you know what? If you hear people say things like, I came to believe, I'm here long enough, and I mean no offense to anyone, I don't really care what you believe. I don't care what I believe. I like to be more concerned with what is. And I don't know what is most of the time, and that's why I have to be very, very, very involved with the program, because the program is based on principles that give me an arrow, a pointing, a direction as to the fact that I don't know anything. That should be the song here. I don't know anything. You don't know anything. Let's share it. You know, and we're going down this road together. And the thing is you got to laugh a lot along the way. You know, life is a joke, and we're the punchline. And if you miss out on that, you know, it goes by so fast. You know, it seemed like I was You know, it seemed like I was 30 and I went out for a prune Danish and a cup of coffee. I came back, I'm 60. You know, boom, it just happened like that. I said, the coffee isn't even cool enough to drink. You know, like, it just goes by like that. And I don't have time anymore to listen to all the mumbo jumbo that goes on. I mean, I don't get the newspaper. I don't listen to the news. I could care less. Because most of it is just like an AA meeting. Nobody knows anything. If this happens, then that will happen. If that don't happen, then this probably couldn't happen. It may happen, but it won't happen if this happens. You know? Who needs that? You go into bed and go, you know? It's like, nobody knows. You never hear anybody come on and say, okay, tonight we're just going to tell you what we know. It would last about 40 seconds, you know? And it would be the weatherman saying, we're having a blizzard. You know, I can see it coming down, you know? Like, there's absolutely nobody knows anything. And, you know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love being around guys who are just like me, you know, totally unscarred by education. You know, I sponsor a guy who got as far as about the fourth or fifth grade, and he's now about 8 years sober. And I sponsor a psychiatrist, which is, God love him. And the psychiatrist calls me because he's newly sober, about 6-8 months now, and he's very upset about the fact that the guy who only went to the fourth grade has a key, and he doesn't have a key. And so you got to kind of just level with the guy and say, we trust him, you know, like, you know, he's had the key for a while, he makes the coffee, he knows how to do it. And I'll be very frank with you, when he shares with me about you making the coffee, he says every week you ask the same question, how come we do it this way? And he just knows that's the way we did it the week before. You put so much coffee in and you make the coffee. It's not a challenge every week, you know, like, you know, like, which part of this is the most, you know, overwhelming for you? The part where you put the water in or the part where you put the coffee in? I mean, you know, is this too complex? You know, let's back up and do it in steps, you know? You admitted you were powerless over coffee, you know? The bottom line is that if you get a head full of knowledge, and there's nothing wrong with knowing something, the thing is keep it to yourself, you know, like that. You know? Just keep it to yourself, you know? Keep it a secret, you know? I go on now these silent retreats. I started this several years ago. I went away for a day and didn't talk. I thought, this isn't that bad. So I went for 2 days, then I went for a week, then I went for a month. And by the time I came back, I realized how much nonsense we talk about. I mean, how little conversation there really is, how little listening there really is. It's more like priming the pump. Okay, I'm listening to what you say, but as soon as you take a breath, it's my turn. You know? You know? And what I noticed when I was away on this retreat is that when you realize you're not going to get asked anything, you stop almost thinking. And when you stop thinking, you realize how many distractions there are in my life that take me away from what's real. I tend to think what's imaginary is real. And therefore, I miss out on what's real. And that's why it's real good to go pick up a drunk and take him to a meeting. For me, that's real. You know, I don't care what your problems are all day long. That's New York. I don't care what your problems is. sorry, Bill. you know, I come from New York, but you can say anything as long as you say it fast. You know, like, gee, no, Jew, you know. But the bottom line is that I noticed that, you know, like when you pick a drunk up, no matter what else is going on in your life that day, all you're hoping, I don't care whether it's a marital problem, I don't care what it is, all you're hoping is, I hope he doesn't throw up. You know? I hope he doesn't throw up. That becomes the realest thing in your life. And it's amazing how everything else becomes so secondary, you know? You're not thinking about, well, I wonder if you buy the brown suit or the blue suit, you know, the car. No, it's, I hope he doesn't chunk in my car. That's all you're worried about. And the deal is that today, I love the fact that I can come to Alcoholics Anonymous anywhere in the country and know that everybody is using the same literature at this point in time that I'm using. I also love the fact to know that everybody here has a story about something that's happening to them now, has happened to them, or is ongoing happening with them, and they're not complaining about it, but they're staying sober and doing the deal along with it. You know, in the short time I've been here, just a couple of days, I heard of a woman who lost her sister in a car accident. Her sister was killed on the way to school. Another woman whose husband died in Iran. My buddy Ernie there, who's got this ongoing hip. Everybody has something. I don't care who you are. You have something. When you get sober, something happens. And what that something is the reality of life. And you come to grips with the fact that this is it. This is not a dress rehearsal. This is it. You know, it's not about wondering what comes next. This is next. There ain't nothing really out there. This is here now. Do it, you know. And I go to the movies. I no matter where I go now, it's AA stuff. It's amazing. I can't get away from AA. It's like I'm in the AA, you know, Twilight Zone. I just can't get away from AA. I never go to the movies. I hate the movies because, you know, it's like I just don't like to go to the movies. But a buddy of mine talked me into going to the movies to see the Titanic, and I already knew the end. I think I don't want to tell this guy, but it's going now, you know. Like, you know, it may take 3 hours, but it, you know, unless they rewrite history, this thing's under the. This thing has been sand lappered, you know. But what we did was we got there early because you got to invest like $30, $40 in popcorn and stuff. So. So I was watching the screen and they were playing music and there was nothing on the screen. And as I was sitting there, it hit me how that screen was representative of reality. And to me, it was representative of God. There was absolutely nothing on it. It was just simplistic. And then the movie came on and it ran for 3 hours. A good movie. It ran for 3 hours. When the movie was over, everybody started boogieing out of the theater. I sat there because after they ran the credits, the lights were on and everything, the screen went back to what it was. And the deal was for 3+ hours, we were totally distracted from the reality of the screen with what was being projected on it. What was being projected on it was imaginary. The screen is real. And I see God in my life that way today, that there are a lot of distractions, and I project things up onto the screen, and it looks like I'm being even responsible, but really I'm just being busy. And I'm finding things to not look at the reality. And the reality is that, and our book talks about it so wonderfully, that there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. The spiritual life is not a theory. You have to live it. In order to live it, you do the ritual. But don't get distracted, because it's so easy to get distracted. You get distracted in thinking that this is more important and this is more important until you realize at some point in your life, and I don't mean to be morbid about this, but every human thing that you are involved in or with is going to die, go away, or change. And if it's human, that's just the way of it. And as you get older, you become more and more aware of this. I had a son who passed away about 5 years ago, 29 years old. I just never thought he would die ahead of me. And I remember sitting with and holding him in my arms and breathing, laying in bed and breathing in unison with him. And he died of AIDS, and he died a horrendous death. He died with losing his eyesight and his hearing and his mind eventually. And I never thought in my wildest imagination that I would have to go through this. Not that I ever thought I was aloof to it, but I just never imagined it having to happen. And in the process of doing that, he and I got to share so much reality. And I know God has a great sense of humor because my ex-wife started coming to my house. You know, I got to meet my husband-in-law. You know, like... You know, we sat and had coffee, and you know, we visited, and I got a chance to watch my son go through the process of surrendering everything that he was familiar with. And you know, I went through a very similar process when I took the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. By taking the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was evicted from my hiding places. I was shown to me to be what I really was, not what I wanted to be, not what I pretended to be, not what I liked people to believe of me, but this is who I was. And I think that we're very fortunate in Alcoholics Anonymous, because when we see people slip, when we see people die, when we see people cope with ongoing disease, when we see people in suffering, we get to realize that this is the reality of life, and that you don't want to run away from that. And also, although it's the reality of life, it's also the pulse of death. If you had to go through death just once, it'd be too overwhelming. But we get a chance to go through it in many deaths throughout our lives by seeing and interacting with people we know in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the more interaction you have, the more experience you get. And you realize that this thing is just zipping along, you know? And that's the way it should be on the one hand, but on the other hand is at some point you have to develop a sense of reality. And that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous. The steps, the program, it points to reality. It says, you know, this is the way you have to go. You may not like it. It may mean giving up a lot of the stuff you have, like your old ideas, you know? But then if you don't, the results will be nil, you know? It's not encouraging. You know, like, well, I'll hold on to some stuff. Okay, then you have a lot of nil, you know? You know? If you want a little bit more than nil, you know, I don't want to break this to you too harshly, but you got to give that stuff up. And you get to, as you go through this process, you get to see the comedy routine. You get to see that God is the master comedian. And what he's doing is he's entertaining us on the one hand and leading us to reality on the other. And you get to say, oh, okay. God loves to do bank shots just to show off, you know, because he has the ability to do anything, you know, he can do anything. I remember when I was about 13 or 14, my dad was dead, my mom was raising seven kids, I was the youngest of seven kids in Brooklyn, and I went to work running numbers, and I went to work for a guy whose name was Tony, and I remember saying, Tony, he always used to say, yo, Ken, what's going on? Tony, do you believe in God? He said, whoa, that's a big question. He said, why are you asking? I'm saying, well, do you think there's a heaven and a hell? And do you think that when you die, you go to hell? And he thought for a moment, because he was always contemplative. And he said, Ken, do we ever lose? I said, what do you mean? He said, do we ever lose? I said, well, we have a day when we take some hits. Not hits. Do we ever lose? I said, no, never lose. He said, you think God's going to make a game he loses? And it hit me. It was my first spiritual experience at that time, you know. Do you think God's going to make up a game that he loses? God is in such hot pursuit of each of us. And what we're doing is we're trying to stay busy so we don't have to be concerned about that. And we get distracted doing all this other nonsense. And that's why when I see Silky hanging there, I think, what a great thing that here he is. He's gone to his reward and all the good he's done for AA. You mentioned Herb tonight. I had never met Herb, but Herb is represented by all the people that he was involved with sitting here. You know, he'll never physically sit in a chair in this room again, but he'll never be absent at one of these things. And that's just the way it works. When you get here, you get to give everything away if you're lucky. And you get to keep nothing. And the nothing you end up with turns out to be everything. And the everything you gave away turns out to be nothing. You know? And the bottom line is that you just get to live life. And you say, wow, this is great. And when newcomers come in to grow with the two, it's about staying sober, honey.
Don't worry. Just hold on to those tapes, and Dick will get you some more if you need them. And the owner's manual. Don't forget the owner's manual, you know. But the bottom line is that everything is being worked out, and we're running around trying to figure out what's going on. You know, and I love, it was like watching that movie. It was kind of reminded me, life is kind of like that movie, The Titanic, you know. It's like changing deck chairs on the Titanic, you know, because you want to get a better view. What difference? It's going down. What difference is the view? It's that baby's humming, you know. You know? And that's why I love to interact with alcoholics, because you get to hear such wonderful things. And, you know, it has nothing to do with reality, but they're wonderful, you know. And you get to hear the people's best ideas. And their best ideas, you think, oh, I'm so glad they're not taping this, you know. Like, you know. And I think of myself when I used to share with my sponsor. Those were the kind of conversations we had, you know. I remember when I was newly sober, I would call him on the phone, because I was separated from my family then and stuff. I said, my wife and kids live out of state. He's a goof for them. The grand jury just indicted me and I'm going to jail. Good, that's where you belong. You belong in jail, you know? You know? And I would, everything I would say, he would have a very, very simple answer to. And then after I went through that 5 to 10 or 15 minutes of, you know, give me some cheese, I'm whining, you know, he would say, hey, Ken, maybe you'll get lucky and die tonight. And he'd hang up. You know? And suddenly you had a whole new perspective of what's going on. Like, where, what is happening with this guy? You know, like, what is happening? And that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous. I love to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. The longer I'm here, I realize that youth is a gift, but age is a work of art, you know? And as you hear more, you just, it's like you're chiseling off all this stuff you don't need. And I have guys that, you know, they come in and they're collectively all committable, you know? You know, I sponsor a lot of 90 guys. They do half the cooking, half the cleaning, and they live alone. And they, you know, they have no idea what's going on, and they stop by regularly to inform me, update me. And all we do is do things together. You know, we go to meetings. We take other yahoos to meetings. Out in our area, we play volleyball on Saturday. You know, it's like a Saturday down at the beach, and we play volleyball. And you say to a guy there, and he's over the net. Then he sits down, and he says, you know, I ain't got no job. I ain't got no wife. I can't see my kids. I'm in there, and then none, and then none, and then none. And here I am playing volleyball. And one of the guys will look at him and say, and not very well. No, not very well. You know, kind of bolster him up a little bit, you know. You know, and in fact, we wish you'd concentrate more on your game, you know, and leave these other incidental things alone. Because what's going to happen is that's all going to work out the way it's going to work out. And you're worrying about it isn't going to do anything for it. It's just going to take up a lot of time and energy. And when I first got here, I thought that worry was part of the process, that you had to worry. Like, if you weren't worrying, then you should be. You were missing out on a very important ingredient of life if you weren't full of fear, you know? And then I read this book, and it says, fear is an evil and corroding thread. It shoots through every fabric of our being. So, of course, I had to look up fabric and all the other stuff. But it is. It's like we create a scenario, and the scenario seems to be two areas. I'm not good enough, or I don't have enough. You take those two scenarios out of the jackpot, you're home free. You know? It's like, I'm not enough, I don't have enough. I don't have enough, I'm not enough. I'm not enough, I don't have enough. And it seems like we go through this little bicycle ride. And then someday you get lucky and you realize you can stop that anytime you want. All you have to do is stop thinking, which for an alcoholic is sometimes very, very difficult. Very difficult. Alcoholics feel if they're not thinking, they're not breathing. You know, they think there's a correlation. And you hear people say, well, Ken, I can't stop thinking. It's so important. Okay. Let's look at it this way. Let's look at it medically. Right now, are you thinking about your heart? No. Is it beating? Yes. Are your kidneys working? Yes. Is your liver working? Yes. Is your body making a whole new blood system up for you? Yes. Are you creating all these new neutrons and eons and everything else in your body? Yes. Are you thinking about any of that? No. See, you're not even important to you. You know, you know. Even you don't need you, you know. You're just incidental. You're like change, you know. A quarter and a half a buck, you know. And the deal is that I come to these meetings and I love to hear everybody come at this from their own little perspective, because somebody's here and they see life this way, and then they go ahead and they encounter some more life, and then they see it another way, and then after a while they realize that the greatest gift you can give an alcoholic to me is when they realize that life is impermanent. There's absolutely nothing going to stay constant. And once you have the gift of impermanence, that nothing is going to stay constant, then you can get on and really live life. Because you realize, no matter what this is, it's going to change. It's not going to be the same way tomorrow. It's going to either get better or worse. You can't say, it's going to stay the same. It's never going to stay the same. We don't stay the same. Nothing stays the same. And you see people running around saying, I want to get rid of it. I want to hold on. I want to get rid of it. I want to hold on. I want to hold on. You want to get rid of it? Don't worry. It'll take care of itself. I looked at the ocean today, and the ocean in the morning, I got up at 6:30, and I had a cup of coffee, and I'm watching. The water was all the way in on the beach. The tide was in. Over the course of the day, the tide went out. You know what's going to happen tomorrow? I'm going to clue you. It's going to come back in. But don't worry. It's going to go back out. In, out, in, out. That's the way it works. And that's the way life works. Sometimes it seems as though everything is coming your way. You know, it's the period of consolation in your life. Everything, all the gifts of life. Even the parking god. You have open spaces and, you know. Oh, yeah. I went to park today. I'm so in harmony with God, the parking god. Some lady pulled out just as I got there. It was so spiritual. I said the serenity prayer twice. Okay. And then there's the desolation. Desolation when it looks like everything's going away. And you want to run after it and try to catch up with it. And the smart people, after you hear a while, realize that there's no chasing anything. You just stand still, and what's meant to come back will come back. You know, I go to a lot of funerals. I see people work their whole life to get ready for life. I'm getting ready for life. What do you think's going on now? Is this intermission or what? And then they die. And I watch funerals when they go by in my neighborhood. I never saw a hearse with a U-Haul. They don't even have luggage racks. You know, they just have the guy and that's it. They're, you know, I'm taking them to drop them off. You know, that's it. And you're worried about all this other stuff. I mean, when I was a kid, they had me hiding under a desk in case there was an atomic attack. You know, hide under the desk. Oh, yeah. We've learned a little bit about atomic energy since then, you know. Just close your eyes and cover your face and kiss everything goodbye, you know. But it was like, this is the deal, you know. And I found out in life there's always people for something and there's always people against something. So just find out where they are and then don't pay attention to them, you know. The Berlin Wall came down. Everybody, oh, the Berlin Wall came down. And then it was that guy with some people who played handball, didn't like it. Hey, the handball thing is down. You know, Berlin is for handball, you know. And you say, so what difference? The world is totally illogical. And we're trying to address it like it's logical. Some night when you have an hour to kill, no pun intended, watch the news. You know? When they get done, if you're not confused, then you didn't watch enough. Go back and watch some more. This is not a logical world. If this were a logical world, men would ride side saddle. You know? This is not a logical world, you know? This is not. You know? It's not what's going on. It's all perceptional, you know? This whole life is perceptional. It's like a snail sitting on a turtle going, whee, you know? It looks different than it really is. I have a buddy who owns a dog. It's called a Chihuahua. I don't know if you know what a Chihuahua looks like, but to me, it looks like a big dog that's far away. And then you realize it's sitting on your foot. And so the perception of it is so different than the reality of it. You know, when we're done here, there's going to be a 13-step dance. You know? So I'll get you out in time, you know? And the people from County Mental Health should have special tags. You know? But people will look around and go, there must be somebody here for me. You know? And that's just the way we are. It's like, that's just the way we are. And I love us that way. I love Alcoholics Anonymous because it's one of the few places I can come, be totally insane, and nobody even notices. You know, like, nobody even notices. It's like, we just one of the batch, you know. And nobody knows anything. And that's why I like to come to these things. And I like to hear people laugh because I know that you cannot laugh and think at the same time. So every time you're laughing, you're getting a respite from you. You know, like it's like the favorite topic, you know. Like if there was a song here, it would be, I'm always on my mind, I'm always on my mind, you know. And the bottom line is that we just get caught up in this stuff. And that's why it's real important for you to belong to a home group. That's why it's real important to you to have somebody in your life who either sponsors you or you interact with or you meet with spiritually. The book calls them proteges and spiritual guides. But we all need someone to be able to go to and talk to without having them interpret our lives. Just as a sounding board, because you need to get a lot of this stuff out. Otherwise, it just builds up and it looks like it's real. It's amazing how the unreal can look real and then the real doesn't even get noticed. And so what happens is, and fortunately in AA, we have a lot of people who are good listeners. They really are, because they're listening to you and they realize you've got to say this. It doesn't mean anything, but you got to say it because you got to hear it because you think it's important. It doesn't exist. It's not going to amount to anything, and next week will be different. But, hey, take your time. You know? And if you need an hour, take an hour. If you need 2 hours, take two. Whatever you need, take it. And the bottom line for me has always been that I always had the program. So, and I read countless times in our literature, and thank God it's there. It says, what's going on with me is beyond any human power. However, I live in the world of humans, so I have to engage with humans. But at the same time, it's this spiritual thing, and it's this total awareness of the reality that I never got to see before. And I don't have any words for it. I wish I could explain it better. It's in the book. And as you read the book, it says all those wonderful things. When the alcoholic drinks, something happens. Well, what's that? You know, something. Can you be more specific? Yeah, lots of something. You know? And the deal is that we have to use words like that because this is a spiritual deal. And we just don't have the vocabulary. We make it up. You know, people make up all kinds of things. And we introduce it to AA, and it's like, I've been here long enough. There are people here with a lot more sobriety than me. And you saw them standing tonight. And they can tell you from their experience, I'm sure, much better than I can, that this is like waves. New ideas come into AA. And fortunately, they'll stay for a while, and then they'll just wash out. They'll lap us in. They'll go back. You know? Why? They'll go back because they have no basis in reality in the spiritual world. What we need in the spiritual world, we already have. We don't need any additional stuff. And so that stuff comes in, it gets real hot for a while. You know, people make up words like denial was a big word about 10 years ago. Denial. He's in denial. She's in denial. You know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't use that word. It says the delusion has to be smashed. Now, you go to a dictionary, because, you know, I'm unscarred, and you look at the word denial. It's so weak and puny. It says, someone who knows the truth and just doesn't want to admit it. Denial. Then you go and you look up the word delusion. It's a good AA word. It says psychotic thought. Where the individual involved has no concept of reality. You know, that's our word, delusion, you know. Denial is like spiritual growth. You know, you move to denial. Yeah. Used to be delusional. Now I'm in denial. Yeah. You know, I'm quickly afoot toward rigorous honesty, you know. But that's the deal. And when those words come and they go, and dysfunctional, and he's there, and that, the ba, the boom, the bing, the bomb, you know. In New York, they used to say, not for nothing. But that, a lot of that stuff is not for nothing. Doesn't mean it's not important to the individual at the time, but it's not going to be constant. It's going to change, because in the spiritual realm, you get to realize that what we see out front is just a puppet show. You got to look backstage and see who's making up the stage up. What's going on backstage? And after you hear a while, you realize that this is like a magic act. By the time you see the rabbit, you've already missed the trick, you know? Even the remedial guys like me, there's a rabbit, you know. The trick is done. It's over, you know. And sometimes you'll hear people take credit for the trick. They don't even know. They just saw the rabbit, you know. And that's the way we are here. And that's okay. It's okay. Everything is okay as long as you're not drinking, you're not judging, you're not trying to be something other than who you really are. Don't get distracted from who you really are. It's so easy to do, you know. There was a movie out years ago, and I saw it on TV, otherwise I wouldn't have seen it. It was called War Games. And it was about a kid with a machine that could set the whole world at war through atomic radiation. And he started playing tic-tac-toe with the machine to distract it. And he kept putting an X in the middle. And the machine, no matter what it could do, couldn't win. Until finally the machine stopped and said, the only way to win at this game is not to play. And that's what we do here. The only way to win with a mind that's constantly trying to outthink me is not to play. You can't do anything for me, so just hang out there. You know, I got a lot of other stuff I got to do. I got to pick this drunk up. I got to go to this meeting. I got to set up coffee. I got to set up tables. I got to do things that mean something. I haven't got time to visit with you. You know, you are very, very annoying at times. You're always confusing, and I have never found you to be anything but misleading. So just go over there and sit. You know, I got a few minutes to kill. I'll come back and we'll play, you know. And that's the deal. You don't have to hang out here, you know. And I see people running around trying to do 10 things at once. Just do the deal here. Just follow the ritual here. If you do the ritual on a regular basis, at some point you're going to turn around and look, and you're going to have a decade built into your life, then 2 decades, then 3 decades. And they're going to be each one more awareness of what's really going on. You know, most people think life is going from A to B to C to D to E to F to G to H. You know, all true. I won't go any further. It gets embarrassing. But that's not life. Life is going from A to deeper A to deeper A to deeper A until eventually you realize that the whole process is the deal. Just keep doing the process. And don't be so much into the management program. And have a lot of laughs. You know, you got to learn to laugh at yourself, because everybody else is, you know? So you might as well just get used to it, you know? And don't take life so seriously, because it's not meant to be serious. It's meant to be a lot of fun. You know, in our book, in the owner's manual there on page 132, the centerpiece of that page says, we absolutely insist on enjoying life. We absolutely insist. on enjoying life. And I call it the centerpiece because I used to run numbers, so everything is numbers with me. And it's the 33rd line of that page. There's 16 lines above it. There's 16 lines below it. There's two words to the right of it and two words to the left of it. It's perfectly centered. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. If newcomers could see no laughter, why would they want to come?
My name is Larry. I'm 15 years sober. Nothing works.
Well, gee, I'd really like to have what he has, you know? You know? Why shouldn't we laugh, the book tells us. We've recovered and we've been given the ability to help other people. This is supposed to be a lot of fun here, a lot of yucks. You know, sometime if you're confused about it, stand nude in front of the mirror, you know? At my age, you say, wow, I didn't know that was there. You know, like, when did that happen? You know, like, every day is a new deal, you know? Like, then you turn around and you kind of stand with a mirror. I mean, that's a lot of yucks, you know? Like you say, and this is about laughing and having fun, you know? And it's as we know that God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. You know, we make our own misery. You know, like it's like, oh, yeah, like, yeah, yeah. Nothing's going my way. I think we should have a new tradition in AA. I'm not much for changing the program. But the new tradition should be that when you share at a meeting, you should be made to listen. I get so tired of going to meetings and hear people say, you know, I feel so good when I leave this meeting. I don't know why. I don't come often. Why don't you just try listening? Run that, you know. I know you're going fast, but they are your thoughts. You know, instead of like having a statement followed by an argument. Well, I should leave. No, I should stay. No, if I do, just listen to what you say the first time. It was important. The deal is that you come to these AA meetings, you get involved, you have a few yucks along the way, you get to see other people, you get to see Joanne, you know, when she first came in, and now she's 18 years sober. There's about 15 people that came in and with her and the group of 1980 that we just gave cakes to. You know, you get a chance to see people come in, put their lives together. And they're putting their lives together one day at a time, not knowing what's going on. You know, it's like putting together a puzzle. The only thing is you don't have any of the pieces. Okay, this is a little more tougher than I thought, you know. And the bottom line is that in the meantime, you get to go to meetings and hear all the best solutions. People don't have problems. They just have these solutions. You know, the solutions are the problem. You know, like, you know, alcoholics, our logo should be excess is not enough. You know, like, it's never enough. No matter what you have, it's like, well, I'm a little shortchanged there, you know. And laugh, you know, this is a good thing. I get to see Jay and I get to visit with people that I've seen over the years. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And more importantly, for me, it's an awareness. Every time I see people that I haven't seen in a while, their scenario has changed, as has mine. And sometimes we get to share that. Sometimes I get to hear them when they talk if they're a speaker. And you find out that nobody's standing still. Absolutely no one. You know, I think maybe I should starch my tie so it looks like I'm moving even when I am standing still. You know, like, you know, give the illusion. You know, it'd be easy to, you know, newcomers, you know, hey, your tire's really blowing there, you know. But it's like, you know, you just, it's a perceptional thing. And alcoholics are so into ourselves. You know, we have a guy in our area who just went through an unbelievable thing and with the law, and he ended up stealing a tank. And he went down, and like, from the armory. And he just was having a bad day, I guess, or something. But he, like, went over a bus and a Jeep and some other things that were in his way. And I was thinking of him tonight when I was reflecting on that part. It says, we will remove the obstacles in our path. You know, like, you know, he didn't do that. He just flattened them, you know, kept going. Like, you know, and you realize everybody sees the solution differently. And the idea is that I realize that at any given time, and that's why I love to come to group meetings, you realize that at any given time, somebody in this room could flip out. They could just flip out. Hey, look at that. And you just hope it isn't you, you know, like, as I hope it's not me, you know. And I have,
And I have been here long enough, fortunately, to see that no matter what I'm looking at, it's different than the way I see it. And that what I have to do is just give it time so that I can see it the way it really is. You know, I mentioned that my son had passed away about 5 years ago now. And he died in the hospice. And I go there every year several times, but especially on the anniversary. And it was in September. He was dead 5 years. And I go there throughout the year because they have a great meditation center there. And now, Joan Kroc, who is very wealthy, her husband started the McDonald's, founded the McDonald's chains of hamburger places. And he passed away, and she does a lot of philanthropic work. And she put this little playground outside of the hospice so that the grandkids and the kids can play on swings and sliding boards and all. And she put this stuff around it so that if you fall, you don't get hurt. It's like a real soft material. And you go there now to use the meditation room like I do, and as you pull up to it, the gates open automatically. It's like an awesome little place. And these gates just open automatically. And it's probably one of the nicest pieces of real estate in all of San Diego. It overlooks the whole Mission Valley area, and you can see the ocean from there. And there's like 23 beds in there. Every room is individual, and you can bring in your own stuff if you have a loved one who's in there and decorate their room any way you want. And the bottom line is that these kids are out there laughing and playing. And their reality of hospice is it's a fun place to go. It's a fun place to go. It has all these rides and games, and it's fun. Bright colors. The parents have a whole different perception of what the hospice is about. Because inside it's a parent dying or a spouse or another child or whatever. And the deal is that as the parents come out and get the kids and want to move home, the kids don't want to go. The kids want to stay, and the parents can't get away from there fast enough. And you know, as a result of the life I've been fortunate enough to live, I get to see both parts. I get to see the laughter, and I get to see the pain. And I realize that in all of the pain is a laughter, and in all of the laughter is a pain. There's nothing that's 100% of anything. If you want to laugh, there's a pain involved. If you want to be in pain, there's laughter involved. You know, it's like sometimes you just get so overwhelmed that you start laughing because there is no solution. Your mind is totally useless. You've used up your best ideas and still it's nil. You know, and when you get to that point, that's the point when God kind of steps in and takes over. Because it's like, okay, go ahead and play and do what you got to do. And when you're totally exhausted, I'm such a gentleman, I won't step in until you're all played out. And that's the way it happens. And I read a lot that last talk that Dr. Bob gave. Wherever I travel, it's always in my book. And it was such a simple talk because he knew his time was limited here. And what he talked about is this thing being what? All boils down to love and service. And that we all need a pat on the back. And we all need someone to take us to a meeting. And sometimes we don't need someone to tell us so much what's wrong with us as maybe what's right with us. And sometimes you don't need someone to tell you anything just to listen to you. Because you need that experience of getting detoxed, so to speak. And it's like when you get arrested, they put you in an area, and I just heard about this. But they de-lice you. And by de-licing you, they take a thing and they put it in places that you don't think anything should go into. And the whole idea is to make you fit, to fit in with everybody else. And when you do this program, when you buy this big book or get this big book and you go through these steps, those steps are the de-licing process. It allows you so you can fit in with everyone else. And you fit in a different way. Instead of being at war with them, as that chapter into action says, we stop fighting what? Everyone and everything. You know, we're not at war with anything. And it comes to us, it says, without ever really even fighting for it, eventually it just happens. And you don't even know it happens until it happens. And then you know it happens. And then somebody said, yeah, how did it happen? I don't know, it just happened. You know, we don't have the logical reason to explain anything. And in the meantime, you get to live the whole of life. And that's my best wish to all of us, myself included, is that when we leave this room tonight and we go out into whatever the remainder of this night is, we just make ourselves a promise to start to live the whole of life. And not some myopic version of life, not some distortion of it, but the whole thing. So that when the day comes and the chips are cashed in, we haven't missed the ride. The whole idea is to get on the ride and have a good time. And if you're confused about what to do, help somebody else. You know? Don't be so introspective that, well, I'm going to buy this new book on examining myself from the position I've never examined myself from before in 37 days. You know, leave that book on the shelf for 600-700 years. You know, you'll get back to it. You know, but get into the book where it says in action. Do the things it talks about. You know, everything here is just so plausible and so practical. When you go to bed at night, you what? You constructively review the day. Not destructively, you constructively review the day. Then you go off to bed. When you wake up in the morning, we know you don't know Marcus. You don't know anything. So you're going to do a little prayer, and you're going to ask God for what? You're going to ask him for inspiration and intuitive thought. No logic. You don't say, God, help me think. I mean, that's a prayer that God wouldn't allow an alcoholic to say. You know, like, God, please help me think today. I think too much of you, you know. My child, you know. The deal is you know, it's a deal where if you're around the old times, we have a guy out in our area, he just celebrated 55 years, Hugh McCoy, and Hugh comes to the meeting, and he always says the same thing. Do the do's and don't the don'ts. Thank you, Hugh. You've been saying that for 55 years. You know when Hugh shares, you're always going to say, do the do's and don't the don'ts. And you say, wow. And newcomers say, wow. You know? 55 years, and that's what he's learned, you know? You know? And then you have to kind of poke him and say, if you're lucky, you'll pick up on that. You know? But people think this is such an elaborate thing, and it's so simple. You know, it's like, you just learn to, one slogan we have, if you can live it, you live in peace and harmony your whole life, and that's let go and let God. If you can let go and let God, regardless of what seems to be happening, then life seems to work out. I know this room is warm, and it is for me, so I'm not going to keep you here. I know you want to start sizing up your targets of opportunity for the 13 scorpions. Remember, there are lots of sick people here, you know. So you don't have to worry about being selective, you know. God will do for you that you could not do for yourself, you know. And by morning, more will be revealed. And you'll be just don't worry about it. Just don't worry about it. And remember that, as Dennis said, you know, you want to pick up your own chair and try to help somebody else out and push them on the floor and stuff. Just take your own chair. And I want to thank you very, very much for letting me come here. This has been a great weekend for me. I have some things coming up in my own life, as I mentioned, that are going to be a little inconvenient for a while. But you know what? They're not big deals. There are absolutely no big deals in my life. I had a chance on December 4th of 1973 to hold my son in my arms and to have him tell me that this was the best thing that ever could have happened to him, that I could have been his dad, and that this was the best life he could have had. And even though it seemed different to me, that he was real glad that everything had just evolved the way it had evolved. And that he was glad I was there for him. And the same way with his mom who was there. And he wanted us both to be happy. He said, you know, you guys go on and live life and be happy. I know you will. And that's my charge today. My charge is not to try to figure out anything. Because I have already proven to myself more than once, I just don't have that capacity. My charge today is very simple. Whenever anyone anywhere reaches out, I want the hand of AA to be there. And if I'm that hand, I want it to be the hand that was given to me. And that is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, just the way it is. Not diluted, not subtracted from, not added to, but just the way it is in the big book. Just the way it is so that I'm not writing any bad IOUs for future generations. I don't want to write any bad IOUs for future generations by not doing what's in that book. What's in that book has worked for me and countless others. It has not only added years to my life, it added life to my years. This is the best life I could have had. Nobody owes me anything.
If I were to check out, I always say this, if I were to check out on the way home, I'm not planning it, but if I were to check out, nobody owes me anything, not one tear. I'm long past my expiration date. You know, like, I shouldn't even be here in many scenarios. But I was very fortunate enough to be here. And I was very fortunate enough for you guys to invite me here tonight. And you know, I've been here so long, I just don't have any mental defense against the next meeting. And I sure hope that you don't have any mental defense against the next meeting. There used to be a Hindu guy who I sponsored for a while, and then he passed away. And he used to come into my house, and when he came into my house, he always put his hands together, and he would say to me, "Namaste, Ken." And namaste, loosely translated, means the God in me recognizes the God in you. And as long as the God in me recognizes the God in you, then it doesn't make any difference how we disagree on the surface. We wouldn't bring any harm to one another, because sooner or later we all realize we're the same branch on the same tree. You know, we all swim in the same water here, and it's our job not to pollute it. And all I can say is, I thank you very, very much for my life, and I thank you very, very much for all the good that you have allowed me to enjoy, simply because you told me the truth and gave me a program that I could stay with regardless of whether the tide was coming in or going out, whether I was in consolation or in desolation. I can't thank you enough for that. May God bless and keep all of us. Namaste. God bless you.